Hello and welcome to another episode of Food for the Future podcast, where we discuss pressing issues of agri-food systems with leaders and change makers from all around the world. My name is Aleksandra Rajanovic, I'm your host. And today we have a pleasure of being here with two amazing guests, Maximo Torero, chief economist of FAO and chair of FAO Youth Committee, and Shimora McNee, a development professional and member of World Food Forum Youth Policy Board, which is a global body of young change makers responsible for shaping youth-led policy initiatives in food and agriculture. So today we will explore the themes of youth empowerment, sustainable agri-food systems, and the crucial role of women in agriculture. So without further ado, I would like to start. One more time, thank you for being here with us. It's a pleasure having you both here. And Maximo, given your role as a chair of FAO Youth Committee, how do you see World Food Forum's contribution to youth empowerment in agri-food systems transformation? And what do you think it's important for young people to be at the forefront of this movement?
No, thank you. Thank you so much for the invitation. I think there are many different reasons of why the World Food Forum was created, but also many different ways in which we are contributing to this process of bringing more leadership on the youth. On the first side, of course, is to find out that for the youth that there is a space where they can come and present their ideas. That's the, I think, is more an advocacy role to attract young generations into a sector which today is mostly aging. It's a sector that if you go to rural areas, you will normally find aging people, which are doing a great job, but we want to rejuvenate that and we want to create more attraction. So that's one role. The second role, of course, is, okay, they can come, but if they don't play a role and they are not empowered to do things, then the advocacy doesn't have a concrete result of it. So that's what I think we have been evolving over time. It didn't happen from day zero, but I think it's a process that every year, I think the youth group, which of course includes gender, women, females, and indigenous people, is starting to get more attraction and more empowerment in the way they are being part. If you see, we started this 4 years ago, the youth committee 5 years ago, close to six. Now you have a youth office in the UN office. You have in many countries the same happening. So I think it has worked in that sense. It has created institutionality. And then the third element, which I think is important, is that the topic of this year is good food for all for today and tomorrow. And the tomorrow is for the youth. So if they are not part of this process, then we're breaking the process by itself.
Exactly.
And we want them to be part of this. And that's it is. And it's not only them, it's them with other generations. The idea is how we can work together so that we can have also good food for tomorrow.
Thank you. And Shimora, from your experience, from being actually experienced in both development and agriculture and being a member of World Food Forum Youth Policy Board, what do you believe is the role of World Food Forum in empowering youth to take an active leadership in agri-food systems?
I think the role of the World Food Forum is an important one. It doesn't just provide a national platform or a regional platform, but a global one, which is unique in and of itself. As youth, we're able to exchange ideas, share our thoughts, brainstorm, and actually develop concept papers that are a reflection of our thematic areas within the agricultural sector. From my own experience within the last few months, I've worked closely with my Latin American counterparts, with them sharing some complex challenges and us coming up with tailored solutions for those challenges. That is very empowering. And even interacting with other regional counterparts from North America or Asia or Africa has definitely highlighted the fact that we do need to have dialogue. We do need to have a discussion. Like Maximo mentioned, we add a future. But also we had to know, we're already doing the work. There are some persons who may not be in an advocacy space or activist space, but they're public servants doing the work, challenging the status quo, challenging the way we look at sustainability and resilience and ensuring that we're included in the process. So the World Food Forum definitely has provided that platform. And as a youth policy board member, it's actually an honor to be able to be doing the work and being the voice for those who are unable to really occupy this space and who are underrepresented. So youth are definitely the drivers of change within the agri-food system. Like I said, we're challenging the way we look at resilience. We're challenging the way we look at sustainability to ensure that we do have a sustainable future.
Well, I just have to add that it's incredible having initiatives like World Food Forum, which are giving youth an opportunity to take part and lead the change. So, Maximo, this year's the theme emphasizes both the right to good food for today, for the future generations. So, what does this theme mean to you?
This is a motto, of course, but it's a really important motto because it has a significant content. Normally, we never were able to link what we do today to what we need to do for having what we do today tomorrow. And today, normally we forget that the agricultural sector, the agri-food systems, as we call it, produces the food that we eat, and therefore assures the right to foods. We call it this year foods in the World Food Day because of diversity of foods, no healthy diets, that's what we're looking for. Of course, still we are not able to achieve the right to food to everybody. But we have to continue doing that. That means we have to produce more, but we have to produce more with less. And that's the link to the second component, which is for tomorrow. Because when you go to any COP, any climate meeting, they will always see the agricultural sector as the bad sector. The sector that creates 30% of emissions, the sector that destroys biodiversity, the sector that uses the water and land. But they forget one little simple thing. They give food. This sector gives you food. So we cannot have a world without food, because we won't have people. Beautiful world, beautiful environment, but no people. So we need to link both. And why? Also because it's the only way we will achieve a better environment for tomorrow. The only sector that has the capacity right now to reduce emissions and produce more with less is the agricultural sector. Energy is resolving by itself. Those are the two sectors that really drive most of the emissions in the world. Energy is resolving. The transmission, the change of the energy mix is resolving itself. But agri-food system is a lot more complex. So we cannot forget about it, and we have to bring investment to the agri-food system. So that's why it's so important, this linkage of good food for all today and for tomorrow, and assuring the right to food today, but also assuring the right to food tomorrow.
Thank you, thank you. And Shimora, in your work with the Youth Policy Board and Climate Finance, how do you perceive our theme, Good Food for All, for today and tomorrow?
When I think about the theme, I think about one word, resilience. As a young person from the Caribbean and a cohort member of the Latin America and the Caribbean, one thing that has been highlighted are the unique challenges that we face in relation to climate vulnerabilities and our reliance on food imports. Therefore, it's important for us to have tailored solutions that tackle those vulnerabilities and to ensure that we try to reduce our import bill. I know within the Caribbean context, on a higher level, there is a target where we're trying to reduce our import bill by 25% by 2025. And COVID has highlighted to us just how vulnerable we are in terms of our supply chain disruption and our reliance on our high food import bill as a result of that supply chain disruption. Therefore, some of the solutions that have been set for youth is ramping up food production, ensuring that they're integrated in the projects that are developed, ensure that there's a youth component that highlights green entrepreneurship. Also for them to understand that there is an agroecological framework that must be adopted. There's an intergenerational dialogue that must be had. So these are the things or some of the strategies that I can say are used within the Caribbean. And as a Youth Policy Board member, that's actually our focus for the Latin America and the Caribbean, to highlight the importance of an agroecological framework, ensure that it tackles the issues related to climate vulnerability, indigenous knowledge. So I really do see us as youth leaders playing an integral role in our future and building our resilience.
Great. And as we all know, women are facing barriers in agri-food system, even though they are playing a crucial role in it. So, Maximo, as leading the global efforts to empower youth and women, and especially young ones, is there any steps that you think that needs to be ensured for women, especially young ones, to have more opportunity and to have their voices stronger and to be heard? Mm-hmm. So is there anything that we can do about it? What are our next steps?
The concept is simple. Women in the world that we operate are a huge asset. If you have a huge asset and you don't use it properly, then you're losing. For me, the concept is very simple. Now, the question is why we're losing it and what we need to do to avoid that to happen. Because it doesn't make any, as an economist, it doesn't make any economic sense. But as an individual, it doesn't make any sense also. So I think what we need to think is, okay, what is creating these challenges for women to keep flourishing? Because there has been significant changes over time also. If you look, go to universities today, the change is enormous. No? But still, there are many countries that heterogeneity among the world is enormous. So we need to look at those. Those are linked to several aspects. One is empowerment. We need to empower women. That's a correct concept, but it's an incomplete concept. It's a necessary condition, but not a sufficient condition. Why? Because you can be empowered as much as you want, but if you don't have the assets to realize your empowerment through similar salaries, given the level of education, through positions that can make decisions, like high-level positions, then you're not really empowering. You are just putting a label to it, saying we empower, but you cannot realize that. And that's where assets are central, and that's what we know. We just published it last 2 years ago, a very important report on women in the agri-food system, where it shows that that could make a difference, like having your name in the title of the land that you work with your husband helps you a lot to get loans, to have access to financial mechanisms. Mm-hmm. Having literacy, you go to schools in rural areas, girls leave the school at 11, 12 because they have their period, and therefore their parents remove them from school. That needs to change. That is a cultural norm that we need to change. There are enormous amount of cultural norms that we need to start to think how we can change behavior. What is happening in many countries because of norms of culture, which, okay, we can respect culture of countries, but there are things that are blocking the development of this beautiful asset that we have, enormous capacity that we have. So I think there is a lot of work to change behavior, make world understand, no matter the culture that you are, that this is extremely important to support human capital of females, to include them in the labor markets, and to empower them, but with real empowerment through access to assets. And FAO is doing a lot in that sense. It's trying to work on a lot in this area, not only by creating the Office of Youth and Women, but also through the actions that we're doing with others to try to create transformative actions that help. And we know which they are. But it's not just the action, the policy, it's the norms. We need to work on both together to be able to create the realization. So to answer your question simply, it's very clear and objective that we need to create that change. We need to figure out how we can accelerate it and what actions we need to put in place to change norms, to realize women empowerment, and to finally be able to benefit from this amazing asset that we have that we, for some reasons that many people cannot explain, we are not using properly.
Yeah, Shimona, is a young woman who is deeply involved in agriculture and development, what challenges do you see women are facing in agri-food systems?
I've had the pleasure of working with women-led groups and women-led businesses, and it's very clear that they're owned by women and ran by women. One of the challenges I see, it's an invitation to the table or an invitation to facilitate, well, in dialogue that are facilitated by government or by organizations. One of the challenges that I've seen is an invitation that is directly sent to women. So let's say there's an organization that's run by men, or it's predominantly managed by men. The women tend to be in the background because they may not see the value in bringing them to a meeting or a stakeholder engagement. Therefore, their contribution is missed. And the value that they bring to that organization tends to not be documented, which is very important to understand the full dynamic of their role within a business or an organization or a cooperative, for example. I've seen this within the fisheries industry where, yes, the women may not be the fisher folk, but they are the vendors, they are the marketers, they are the one that is involved in ensuring that the fish is processed. How do we ensure that maybe even the wives or the girlfriends of these fisher folk are documented and a part of the conversation so that we have a bigger picture of their role and their contribution? So a gender-responsive approach to the work that we do is very important to ensure that we capture this information, to ensure that the wages are fair, the conditions are fair, and women are empowered, like Maximo said. That's so critical to ensure that their role within the agri-food system is highlighted, and the challenges that they face are also shared so that they're tailored solutions. So I really do agree that the women are the assets, and it's important for us to ensure that we capture that within the agri-food system and strengthening it. Yes.
Well, I have to add something. As coming from north of Serbia, where agriculture is quite being big part of our economics, and many people are, and even women are being involved in this. I agree that something what is missing also there is having support for women in this field. Even though we finished with all questions, I would like to add one additional. I would usually, in our World for the Future podcast, I ask about what advice do you have for youth who are willing to be part of this agri-food system transformation?
Yeah, look, I always tell the youth here is forget about the structures and the governance and the bureaucracies. Try to find a way in which you can have action and start with yourself. So normally we try to think that by being in post and creating structures, you will be able to have more power. I believe that, of course, that's important. It would be wrong to say that it's not important, but I believe that the actions could make a big difference. And as youth, there are many behavioral actions that you can take that could really help to move the machinery and to create a transformation. The world we have today is a very, very complex world for I have young kids, your ages. It's a very complex world. It's a world that is close to us. Amazing war and injustice is all around. We have a lot of people on hunger and so on and so forth. So it's a world that is not the best of the environments we as older will have provided you, the young people. So shame on us for that. There is a lot of opportunities that we have to take.
Shimor, is there anything you would like to add?
I believe in starting where you are. I when I speak, I remember when I used to speak about agriculture, it was kind of, why are you going into that field? And I just felt passionate, like, we have to eat. We have to ensure that we have a continuation of food production for the future and ensure that we utilize our land as well and secure that for our future. That has always been my passion. However, it was kind of frowned upon. And when I speak to my peers, they tend to think that they don't have a role within this. Now they're seeing the connections with technology and agriculture, engineering and agriculture, and supply chain and agriculture. And I'm saying start where you are. Again, to speak about COVID, that has definitely highlighted to us the importance of ensuring that we play a role in our food production in our countries. Ensuring that we utilize our current skills to do so. And I believe in creating systems and questioning systems as well to see how we can create a kind of shift and push the needle forward towards the direction we want it to go. So starting where you are, maybe that's in your backyard, or maybe that's within your office, within the position that you hold, questioning whether or not this is sustainable, if it makes sense. Also having conversations with your peers about where they see our future in terms of food production and the agri-food system. So starting where you are is critical, and questioning what's working and what's not. Yeah.
Thank you both for your insights. Thank you one more time.
That concludes today's episode of the Food for the Future podcast. For more updates from the World Food Forum, follow us on social media and visit our website at world-food-forum.org. Until the next time,